Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today, Dr. Jennifer Clark, is committed to addressing the suffering of patients with advanced illness through a relatively new field called palliative care. Clark, who directs the OU Center for Palliative Care, is also the medical director of palliative care services at Hillcrest Medical Center. There, she works with an interdisciplinary team of doctors, nurses, social workers, and chaplains to put focus on patients' actual goals of care, which at times differ from their routine medical treatment. Interestingly, one recent study that compared two groups of cancer patients, one receiving the standard treatment, the other also receiving palliative care, showed those in the latter category rated their quality of life higher and actually lived longer. Palliative care often gets conflated with hospice care, but as we'll learn today, ministering to the dying is only one aspect of what palliative care has to offer. Jennifer Clark, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you could be here. I want to start by asking you just to define palliative care.
Palliative care is relatively new in the United States. Across the world, it's been a practice that has been in place in the UK, in Europe, Australia for a couple of decades. But beginning probably in the late 80s and early 90s, we saw the movement of palliative care start here. What it is subspecialized care, just like any gastroenterologist or cardiologist or you know, some subspecialty of medicine. Palliative medicine is a subspecialty that focuses on patients' quality of life when they're living with a serious illness. What that does is that we take a patient and their family, our team that is interdisciplinary, comprised of at least one physician, nurses, social workers, chaplains, pharmacists, and really deals with the complexity that's related to living with a serious illness, everything from pain and symptom management to advanced care planning and processing all of the information that all your doctors are telling you about how your disease process is moving along, what that means for your life and how it's affecting your body. Everything from that to, you know, kind of the psychosocial issues, meaning those things that are impacted by you being sick, everything from your family life to your work life. And then also those spiritual elements of being sick and trying to processing some of the suffering that you're feeling while ill. And so our teams sit down with patients and families who are facing those illnesses and those problems and try to help them process that.
So what often comes up is people ask about hospice as well. So
yeah.
What's the distinction between palliative care and hospice, or are they the same thing?
First and foremost, they are not the same thing. They are kind of related. If you want to think of palliative care was born out of the ideals of hospice. Hospice is defined as an insurance benefit that people receive at the last 6 months of life, essentially. But it really focuses on the elements that I was just talking about, physical management of symptoms, you know, advanced care planning, psychosocial management, spiritual management of a serious illness. With hospice, it's the end stage part of the serious illness, whereas palliative care is involved all the way up from the time of diagnosis on. And so that's its difference. And if you want to think of palliative care as a bigger umbrella with hospice as one small part of what we do, that's kind of how most people relate to it.
And you're board certified or practice in internal medicine and pediatrics. How did you get interested in palliative care, and how does one train to practice that?
Right. I was very fortunate to be in a combined residency program where I was able to sit and be eligible to become an internist as well as a pediatrician. And during that time, I was at a big academic institution and obviously faced with very complex and serious illness on a day-to-day basis. And just felt like there was some other way that we could go about helping these patients, where I felt more like a doctor than any other time was when I was sitting with patients, walking them through the process of, you know, what does it mean when my cardiologist tells me my heart is failing? Or what does it mean when my lung doctor is telling me my emphysema is at end stage? What does that all mean to me? And giving them kind of a framework with which to kind of deal with their illness and allow them to live a full life. And I was seeing that both in my most elderly of elderly patients all the way down into my most young of young patients. And I was very fortunate to be presented with a nurse at my teaching institution that said, you know, palliative care is something you need to consider. And at that time, that was the first time I was introduced into it. And then was able to participate in a training program. Currently, there are 72 hospice and palliative medicine fellowships, which is Basically, you go through basic training, whether you're an internist or a family practice physician or the other subspecialties that lend itself to hospice and palliative medicine. You finish primary training, and then this would be super training or subspecialty training that you would receive after. And there are 72 places across the country that deal with adults, and there are 4 across the country and 2 more coming along that would deal with children. So as people can then train, it's about a year-long extra training, potentially 2 if you want to do research. But for the most part, they learn how to deal with the complexities that palliative medicine tenets are based on.
And so it was, you said, this personal experience of a nurse who saw the way you were coping with or managing these complex ill patients who said that you would do well in palliative care. And I guess what led to that? Where did your journey take you from there? I mean, how long was it until you said, oh, I'm going to apply for a fellowship and make this my career?
Yeah, I was very fortunate because palliative care is a young practice, meaning it wasn't recognized by the American Board of Medical Subspecialties until 2006, actually. So in that time frame, I was allowed to actually train on the job, if you will. I didn't actually go through a formal fellowship. I trained on the job and then went to Harvard and trained from an educational standpoint there through the Harvard Medical School's Palliative Care Center, where I learned kind of how to do advanced communication. How do I sit down and really elegantly communicate with patients so they better understand what healthcare can provide to them? I also learned how to manage complex symptoms and those things through those lectures and through the process of traveling back and forth between my patient care site and my education site. Now that process, which was called grandfathering, is closed. Those of us who are practicing now kind of went through this grandfathering period where we were allowed to practice in our teaching sites and then traveled, you know, to various academic centers, Stanford, Harvard, and the such, to learn about the tenets and the educational aspects of palliative care. And now fellowship training is kind of how you go about becoming a palliative medicine physician. The interesting part of things, I was lucky. So I had Winnie Hennessy was the nurse that kind of came to me and said, you know, this is what you need to do. And from there, I was actually part of my academics institution developing their palliative care services at the academic hospital, both on the adult side, and then I became the medical director for the pediatric hospital. And from there, was really able to not only change the hospital environment, but impacted our own community in developing palliative care and bringing its concepts to our patient population, which was something that was very new on the American medical front.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Clark from the OU Center for Palliative Care, and she's medical director of Hillcrest Palliative Care Services. You mentioned 72 programs and the 2 and maybe soon 4 pediatric programs in the country. These are the fellowships. Is palliative care a growing specialty? How common is it for graduates of medical schools or residencies to go into palliative care? Or is this something people often do later in their career?
It's very much growing. You know, some of the statistics is that palliative care has grown exponentially over the last decade. As I said, as we became a medical subspecialty and recognized as one, the need for it has grown significantly, so much so that all hospitals who have 50 beds or more in them, 80% of them have some semblance of a palliative care service. So you can imagine the amount of hospitals across the United States that are in need of palliative care physicians. And so the training and the education have just started. And so our residents, our trainees are just starting to really understand the tenets and understand the practice because it's been something that's been fairly new. And as a result, we've had a significant growth in the amount of interest, the amount of need, and we have a number of residents that go straight into training and are coming out board certified.
So how busy are you on a daily basis? Like, what's take us through a typical day of a palliative care doctor? I mean, are you seeing patients in the office or is it all hospital-based?
It depends on which community you're in. As palliative care grows in a community, the needs change. Currently in our community, because we're still fairly new, palliative care was started initially here in Tulsa about a decade ago, and it's grown now to where the majority of the major hospitals here in the city have a palliative care service, is that they're hospital-based, meaning they provide consultative services in the hospital. So if you have a serious illness is defined by cancer, congestive heart failure, COPD, chronic kidney disease, liver disease, dementia, and all of those chronic illnesses that are very, very common in the adult world nowadays, we go in and help patients and families who are in the hospital. So my day consists of going, you know, my team and I go from room to room, you know, everywhere from the ICU to the regular medical surgical floors, helping patients live as much as possible with the very serious illness. In some communities, that process has gotten so elegant, if you will, meaning that it's moved very far upstream to where patients at the time of diagnosis of their cancer, palliative care is right at the beginning with their cancer doctors. And as a result, those patients are seen as an outpatient, oftentimes in, you know, clinics that are joined with oncology. And our community is working towards that as we speak.
Can a patient get palliative care and still get ongoing treatment, for example, in cancer? Can they still get chemotherapy and radiation therapy if that's going to treat the cancer, but also get palliative care to ease their suffering, or is it an either-or choice?
Yeah, and I think that's the misconception that most people have, is that, you know, it's an all-or-none type situation, and that's not the case at all, is that palliative care is to be one of the major defining points that when we asked our patients to tell us kind of, what do you think of us? One thing that they really emphasize for those patients who have experienced palliative care is that we provide an extra layer of support, not only for you as a patient and your family, but also for the providers, for the healthcare system, so that the transitions are smooth, and that that all of those needs that are met by the patient, that, you know, the demands on the system, the demands on the family, all have to be in concomitant. You know, whether you're receiving active treatment for chemotherapy, as an example, or dialysis for a kidney disease, or, you know, you've got devices for your heart. Those all go, you know, we just back and forth, hand in hand, try to care for a patient versus it's an all or none type process.
Do patients or families get confused or bewildered sometimes when you approach them and perhaps they don't have a full understanding of what their diagnosis is or what it means for their prognosis or how close they may be to end of life? Or is part of your specialty the communication aspect, and so they either know where you're coming from or you're able to explain it to them?
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is obviously saying the word palliative care is really quite difficult, and most people can't even spell it. And so really trying to explain that, one, most people have never heard of it. If they have heard of it, oftentimes, as we have alluded to earlier, they confuse it with hospice and that it's end of life care. And so once we've explained, just as we talked about earlier, that we are here to provide an extra layer of support to make sure that you have the best quality of life as defined by you as a patient while you're living with your illness. That's what we're here to do. Part of that, as you alluded to, one of the skills as a subspecialist that I have is the skill of prognostication and sitting with a patient, figuring out how functional they are, looking at all of their disease process, you know, the lab work and all of the things that we've seen, their physical exam, kind of what their day-to-day life is, and coming up with kind of, what does this really mean? You know, do you have a life limitation? You know, what are we dealing with, so that you can appropriately make decisions based off of that information? So once we've had a time to sit down with families and talk to them about what we do, how we work with their primary physician, whether it be their oncologist, their cardiologist, their lung doctor, what have you, oftentimes it's a seamless transition.
Do you find nowadays that doctors that you work with, that consult you, are more eager to have you involved, or because of your educational efforts, do they need you less than before?
It's a combination of both, actually. So providers were concerned because many people had gone through training where palliative care wasn't in existence. And so they didn't quite know what we were and kind of how we fit in, how this extra layer of support kind of fit into their picture. And, you know, oftentimes we would convince folks, you know, just let us come in, let us try this and see if it works for your practice, and we'll kind of help guide along. And once folks kind of have us involved, they're like, oh, I get it now. It's kind of similar to the obscenity comment that was made by the Supreme Court justice, you know, you kind of know it when you see it type thing. And as a result, people have really figured out kind of when to get us involved, when the direction of care for a patient is changing, if they get significantly more ill, or if there's a major decision about ventilation, or, you know, being putting on a respirator, or, you know, or placing a feeding tube, or changing chemotherapy regimens. If there's a major decision to be made, that's oftentimes where we get involved, just to kind of help process that Obviously, if a patient's suffering significant pain-like symptoms or symptoms like constipation or shortness of breath or significant nausea, we also get involved. So depending on what the needs are, physicians have really figured out how to fit us into their practice. Now, as we've gotten better about educating not only those coming up behind us, those who are our colleagues and those who have trained us, because it's kind of a three-pronged educational approach since we're new to medicine, we found that people are learning the basic skills of palliative care, just like I have the basic skills of a cardiologist, the basic skills of a gastroenterologist, being an internist. That's what my job is supposed to be. And as we're learning, many of the subspecialists, kind of imbue upon our primary doctors, these are the things that you should do before calling me. And just like any other subspecialist, I've educated my colleagues on, you can handle this. You know how to do this. Let me help when there's complexity. And so that's kind of where we are in our program here.
And along those lines, do patients ask for palliative care more often? In other words, I'm a patient. I don't want to suffer. I've listened to Studio Tulsa on Health with Dr. Clark. How can I get her to be my primary care doctor? In other words, I want a physician who's mostly concerned with minimizing my suffering. Mm-hmm. I don't really wish to go through lots of invasive tests and things. Is there a model for that in down the road anywhere?
Yes, that's what our hope is. As we talked about earlier, as we become more savvy with palliative care in our community, the opportunities for us to be in an outpatient setting and avoiding even hospitalization is something that we would hope to offer our community. One of the first steps towards that here is that through the OU School of Community Medicine, we've been able to establish the OU Center for Palliative Care. And what we do is that is a community-based educational front to educate our community, our patients, our families, our providers about what palliative care is and how it can really help in facing serious illness. Given that first step, we've been able to kind of put this very basic foundation in place for when there's a time that our community needs it, that we can provide outpatient services so that patients can come in, see us, talk about their serious illness, and we can help coordinate with their primary doctors, whether they be oncologist or cardiologist or what have you, about kind of the goals of care. Do we do chemotherapy? Do we not do chemotherapy? Do we talk about transplant? All of those complex questions and what it really means to a patient's life. And so how patients can find out if palliative care should be part of their life, is that they can call the OU Center for Palliative Care and we can provide them information.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher today. My guest is Jennifer Clark, who is the director of the OU Center for Palliative Care and the medical director of Hillcrest Palliative Care Services here in Tulsa. You mentioned the Center for Palliative Care at OU. Uh-huh. Tell me a little bit about how that was started and how do you raise money, things like that.
Palliative care is interesting. Unlike the other subspecialties of medicine, palliative care financially is supported by the concept that we look at a healthcare system, look at a patient, and take the resources that they have, whether it be from their insurance, if they have no insurance, kind of using the system's resources, and taking that money and spending it more effectively. And so we avoid unnecessary costs. And so that's kind of how we substantiate ourselves and that we're a cost avoidance model, meaning as the money comes in from insurances, we say, okay, how do we best spend this money for this patient to provide them the best quality of life? As a result, the way palliative care is supported is often through philanthropic opportunities. We look to our community, to patients who say, this is the right way to go about medicine. This is the way of the ideal of medicine is delivered. And so oftentimes communities buy into that. And that's how our center was founded. We had one of our community members and her family believe that palliative care was much needed in our area, especially in Oklahoma in general, but Tulsa specifically. And so through the generosity of a family foundation, we were founded in 2010. And since that time, we have grown exponentially. Now at the OU Center, we provide advanced care planning clinics where patients can actually come in with their loved ones and fill out their advanced care plans, which includes figuring out who the person's going to be your what we call healthcare proxy or decision maker for you should you not be able to kind of speak for yourself. It also helps people fill out their living will, if they were to have a terminal illness, an end-stage illness, or an illness that would rob them and to be in a persistent unconscious state of some sort. And so the center is able to provide that currently We also provide education to all of our community. We've been through a number of churches, financial planning, estate planners, and providing them the education that they need in order to help patients complete these very, very important documents, especially in the setting of health and the setting of serious illness. And from there, the center is growing, and our hope is that we'll be able to provide actual clinical care in an outpatient basis in the next year or two.
Is there a countercultural element to palliative care? In other words, I have a sense that it formed kind of in reaction to the industrialization of medicine and the fact that so much technology is brought to bear and so much suffering occurs with the treatments that we typically provide patients, that there were a group of doctors or nurses or concerned caregivers who said, you know what, enough. Let's try to get people out of the hospital, take out the needles and stop the blood draws and, you know, give them some respect and dignity. Is that part of it?
Yeah, it's a great question and one that has a pretty long answer. So trying to answer it succinctly. What's happened is, as many folks knew, have maybe remembered back a few decades ago, there were two women, young women, Karen Ann Quinlan and Nancy Cruzan, who were both young women that sustained very significant injuries. One was a car accident, one was a drug overdose that rendered them in a persistently unconscious state. Both of their families had gone to their loved one's doctor and said, you know, they would not want to live this way. Can we allow them a natural death, one that's dignified, one that's consistent with their goals and value systems? And that launched in the United States the whole concept of the right to die a dignified death as defined by the patient. From there, there was legislation that came about called the Patient Self-Determination Act. It was passed in the early 90s. That the whole concept of this right to die, as well as informed consent and refusal. So when you go to surgery, they sit down with you and you have to sign this piece of paper saying, yes, I've been informed about the surgery and things like that. As a result, when that was passed, unfortunately, in the United States, we moved from a kind of a medical culture of paternalism, whereas you kind of did what the doctor said, to one very quickly over a decade's period of time to a thing called patient autonomy, where the patients were demanding of the healthcare system things that that necessarily weren't medically feasible. And as a result, litigation increased. And it also was a time when we had one of the biggest increases in technology and the way that we are able to diagnose and to provide therapy to disease processes. And so it was just this mass chaos and a perfect storm for kind of the healthcare system we're in today, where we have so much to offer. We have, you know, patients demanding of the healthcare system and physicians concerned about litigation that they're offering things that really aren't going to provide benefit to patients. Hence the birth of palliative care, where we sit in and say, okay, what's really medically feasible? What's important to this patient and family? What's their goals and value system? And how do we pull from the world of medicine to honor that? And, you know, what's medically valid? What are the things that are going to provide benefits? Which ones aren't? Okay, of those, which ones fit into this patient's, you know, life best? And so there's a lot to offer. And we're getting back, you know, kind of as we talked about, we went from paternalism to patient autonomy. We're now getting back to this concept of what we call shared decision-making model, where we sit down with patients and families and say, this is your disease process. This is what your prognosis is. These are what we have to offer. And based on your goals and value system, this is what we recommend.
I love the concept of sitting down and really figuring out the goals of care. And it seems seems to run so counter to sort of the workaday world of modern primary care medicine, where you have a 15-minute visit and you have a checklist of 17 items to get through, including all the health maintenance and vaccinations and things like that that doctors are getting graded on. And then when you couple that with all the list of issues that a patient wants to discuss, there really isn't that time or that space to sit down and have a conversation the way you frame it. And that's, I guess, what I was getting at with why it seemed somehow countercultural, that whole idea. I'm curious about the Affordable Care Act, that is Obamacare healthcare reform, and how does palliative care fit into that? Is there in the 2,000-page law, is there something about palliative care under Obamacare?
There was initially, as many of you may recall, in about 2010, the initial kind of draft came out, and there were two lines that were put into the document that said that, you know, for physicians who take the time, whether it be a primary care physician or some subspecialist, whether it be palliative care physician or an oncologist or what have you, they would be compensated for the time that it took to sit down and go through this process, this shared decision-making model with a patient. Unfortunately, it was used as a political platform. Many of you may remember the whole concept of death panels that was brought out. And as a result, out of fear, those two lines were taken out of the Health Care Reform Act. And what our hope is, there has been data since that time that not only shows that introducing palliative care very early in the disease process not only provides higher quality of life for patients, but we actually extend life by the minimum of 3 months. And so this data was really, really important and has been really significant at the federal level, you know, legislative level in discussing about how do we put back this information about advanced care planning and this time element. Because right now, the way medicine is reimbursed, it's not based on time. It's based on kind of how much procedures and things you can get done in a visit. And so our hope is over the next 2 to 3 years, the Center for Advancing Palliative Care, which is our legislative body that's run by Diane Meyer out of the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, that their efforts will replace that back into the act.
So let me get this straight, just so I understand. It's a New England Journal of Medicine article. You have two groups of patients. One group gets standard cancer treatment. The other group gets standard cancer treatment plus palliative care. Mm-hmm. And they not only are happier with their care, but they live longer?
Yes. So Jennifer Timmel at the Mass General up in Boston, she and her colleagues were able to take patients who had small cell lung cancer and kind of put them in these two groups and really demonstrated pretty elegantly that not only did they live better, but they lived longer. And it was about a three-month period of time. That has been replicated by several other studies of different types of cancer. The other article that's really important that both of them tied really changed the face of palliative care in the United States was Atul Gawande, a surgeon up at the Harvard Medical School who, you know, kind of writes frequently.
New Yorker, yeah.
Yeah. In the New Yorker in August of 2010, published an article called Letting Go. And it's a great article I would refer any patient or physician or provider to really understand, you know, from a surgeon's perspective, from a young patient who has a serious illness perspective, what it's like to receive those services. It's a pretty amazing article and one that I would encourage all to read.
Jennifer Clark, thank you so much for being here. It was great learning about palliative care. Tell us again how we can access information on the OU Center.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great being here. The OU Center for Palliative Care is located on the Schusterman campus over there at 41st and Yale. We are on the website. If you go to OU School of Community Medicine, we're under the Centers tab. Under there, you can see all sorts of information through us. Our contact information is 918-619-4127. And so feel free to give us a call or check us out on the web.
Dr. Jennifer Clark, thank you so much. Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. My guest was Dr. Jennifer Clark, the director of the OU Center for Palliative Care and medical director of Hillcrest Palliative Care Services. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.